Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another beautiful, beautiful evening here in Southern California in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio tonight with the lovely and charming, talented and vivacious. There's a new adjective for you, Bobby. Bobby Jean Bell.
Co-host. Welcome to The Writer's Block.
God, great day.
Yes, this first day of fall, and we had like gray skies here, and it
Did
looked
you?
Like it was going to rain, and maybe, and it's just way too sunny in Southern California for me. I need some dark skies.
Well,
I need some clouds. I need some opportunity to not have to smile all day long, you know?
You back east folks are like that, though. Gots to have your snow.
Yeah, we got to have our snow and our rain and our thunder, and yeah.
Have you ever gotten up in the morning and you're up until about, well, not, oh, I shouldn't be asking you because you never go to bed.
I know, I didn't go to bed last night.
But get up in the morning and you think, wow, you know, it's going to be a great day, and then by 10 o'clock you go, I'm tired, I'm going to go back to bed.
Yeah, oh yeah, I definitely had that happen.
I did that tonight before I left for the studio. I was sitting and Jerry looks at me and she goes, "You should have taken a nap." I said, "Yeah, no kidding." I'm sitting here yawning and
do you
now
know
I'm
what?
Okay.
Do you know what happened the last time I had a little nap?
You slept for 3 days.
I had a iced coffee in my hand and it went into my lap and all over my laptop.
Oh,
and it totally fried it.
Not good.
No, it was a very expensive nap.
Not good. Yeah. Well, at least it wasn't a 6 day nap, and then you fried it.
No, it was probably a little short one.
There you go. Well, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing. And Tuscany Bay and Black Dog are around for new writers that don't quite know how to format, don't know how to do their novels or their poetry, whatever they want to do, and they want to make their stuff into a book. And we're there to help you with your editing and your proofreading, your formatting, getting it printed, giving you the best advice we know how to give. And that would be myself and Richard Polinelli, and we'll happily do that for you. Of course, we don't do it for free. But the charges are very, very, very low, and we're there for you, not to make a billion gazillion dollars. Also, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Out West. And Out West is your online source for top brands that are the reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rockmount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. So if you want to get a hold of those folks, their toll-free number is 877-340-9378. And I'm sure they'd be happy to sell you anything they got in their store. And if you want tickets to their concert series, the Out West Concert Series, that direct number is 661-347-9700. And those concerts are the last Friday of the month, October being the very last one. And October is a fun one, going to be fun one because Almeda Bradshaw is going to be here.
Yep.
I love Almeda. She's fun. Okay, and then, of course, since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service. TFM Truckload, that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski and tell him you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and TFM will have something, little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com. truckload.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. And they'll do a good job for you. I used them for years and years and years, and they're wonderful people. Okay, that being said, golly, I just want to get this woman on this show because I am just excited as hell. Our guest tonight is a new writer. We'll be speaking about her first book tonight. She's written two, but only one has been done, and it's what a great book! It's called The Freedom Broker, and our author tonight is KJ Howe. She lives in Ontario, and golly, KJ, she was born in Ontario, lived all over the world, nomadic lifestyle. She attended Salzburg International Preparatory School. I have no idea how to pronounce this other word, but then I'm not German. I have no idea. I'm not even going to try. Albert College before earning a specialist degree in business from the University of Toronto. KJ found success in the corporate world, but her passion for travel, adventure, and stories drew her back to school, where she earned a master's in writing popular fiction from Seton Hill University. She also won several writing awards, include the 3 Daphne du Maurier Awards for Excellence in Mystery and Suspense. And she is also, her day job, as she calls it, she's involved with the International Thriller Writers as the executive director of the Thrill Fest, the organization's annual conference held every July in New York City. So, without further ado, would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, KJ Howe. KJ, you with us?
You bet, and I'm very excited to be here.
Well, we are excited to have you.
We are.
From the moment I opened your book and started reading, you had me.
Uh-huh.
Totally had me.
Well, that's always a writer's dream to hear, that's for sure.
Well, and you know, it's like I told you there on the phone, Bobby and I read every book we get. We have to, because we want to be able to talk intelligently to the writer about their work. And if you don't read the book, you really can't do that. So we read your, and yours is one of the ones where you start reading it, and you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning,
you
and you're
let
still
go.
Reading.
You need to, you know, what happens next?
What happens next? How in the world, because this particular book involves international kidnapping.
Yes, what an interesting premise. I had no idea, KJ, about kidnapping on an international level. Tell us a little bit about that and how you have been so interested in that topic.
Sure. As Jim said earlier, you know, I traveled the world growing up. My father worked in telecommunications, and I knew I wanted to write an international thriller. And when it came to subject matter, I found kidnapping very fascinating because I see it as a purgatory of sorts. You're alive, but you're not really living. And you're kind of stuck in that middle zone, not knowing if you every day when you wake up if it'll be your last day. So I decided to immerse myself in kidnap and ransom, and I have done so for the last 4 years. And I've met kidnap negotiators, former hostages, psychologists who specialize in this area, special forces soldiers who deliver ransoms and execute rescues. So bottom line is I've just tried to immerse myself in the world of Thea Paris, my protagonist,
right.
Who is what we call a freedom broker.
Right.
She's an amazing woman. Thank you for writing strong women in this book.
Well, what, I mean, the book starts.
Strong women in my book, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
she's like this kick-ass woman.
Yeah.
She carries a gun and everything. I mean, you know, she's not afraid of anything.
No fear. And of course, you've made her though a little vulnerable. Tell us a little bit about Thea.
Sure. Well, Thea has type 1 diabetes, and I thought this was really important. First of all, my grandfather had diabetes, and I'm a former medical writer, so I've done a lot of, you know, articles on diabetes, and I thought it was really key, you know, to bring in a character with a physical flaw and or, like I said, a vulnerability, an Achilles heel, and it's a, you know, powerful message, I think, for young people today to see that, you know, someone with a, you know, chronic illness can still be a very strong, capable person who pursues a very demanding career.
Mm-hmm. And we, as the reader, you know, you let us into that part of her life, but the people around her really aren't aware of it. Why did you choose to have her keep it a secret?
Well, I wanted to explore a lot of aspects of diabetes, and I know this will be a series, and I'm definitely going to explore different parts in each novel. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure, like, Thea is in a very tough environment. First of all, she's pretty much the only woman, and also it's a very competitive field. You're going to, black operations and tactical situations where you have to be on your game. And so she was very concerned that, the gentlemen that are on her team might worry about her being, up to the level if she mentioned the diabetes. Mm-hmm. And she monitors it incredibly carefully. She's on an insulin pump, and she's really cautious. And I was very proud that the American Diabetes Association actually mentioned the book in one of their issues, saying that it was a very authentic portrayal of diabetes.
Mm. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's remarkable. We really like her, and we really like her dog.
Yes.
it's always about the dog, right? And the children steal the show at all times.
Yeah, it's like when I used to be a musician, they never follow so and so or his dog.
Yeah, or his dog.
I know. I felt it was really critical. Thea had a similar upbringing to mine, international, always moving, always the new kid. And I felt like giving her, a pet, a special dog that was very protective would be a really nice way of grounding her.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she definitely loves the dog.
Yes, absolutely. And she has, of course, a brother. Tell us a little bit about Nikos.
Sure. Mm-hmm. This does not ruin the story because it's right on the back cover copy.
Yeah.
But her brother, just so I'm, I'm not, no spoilers today.
Yeah, yeah.
No spoilers.
We're going to do our best.
Exactly. Her brother was kidnapped at 12 years old and became a child soldier. And he did return after 9 months, but he was never the same. And this profoundly affected the Paris family, rippled really throughout the years. And I really wanted to explore, first of all, child soldiers. I've researched that extensively as well. And it's a real epidemic, especially in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Africa for 3 years, and that really touched my heart, how these poor kids, are basically, taught to kill. And I also wanted to bring that to the forefront, to show that, a lot of these children who are kidnapped and turned into soldiers, how devastating it can be for their lives. And, so the Paris family is kind of rather dysfunctional, don't you think?
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, we catch on to that pretty quick.
Yeah. There's you take us to a variety of settings that even at the very, very first, when we first meet everybody, they're in a black ops kind of operation. How did you choose the different locales to use in this book?
Well, I travel everywhere I write about if I can, and in all the locations in this book I have been to. And I love to have a really interesting contrast, somewhere like from the depths of Nigeria, right? Kind of the darkness, and then the beautiful scenery of Santorini, which is, if people have not been to Santorini, I highly recommend it. It's one of the most spectacular places on Earth, with that white and that brilliant blue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a volcanic caldera. And really, really beautiful. And then, of course, Athens, is steeped in history with the, Acropolis, mm-hmm. and everything.
Sure.
So I wanted to include that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to Zimbabwe, which is, Victoria Falls is, mm-hmm. one of the most incredible sites and powerful with all that water. So I just wanted to show different contrasts in the story, and hopefully the setting is almost like a character that, mm-hmm. matches the mood of the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And a lot of people are not, or maybe they are, but have forgotten that years ago, Zimbabwe was actually Rhodesia.
Yeah, it certainly was.
And it was steeped in war and continues to be steeped in war.
Oh, yeah. It's been a hot mess there, really.
Yeah.
It's sad because it's like from a, it's a spectacularly beautiful country.
Yeah, if you like jungles.
Well, you can tell by my book I do.
On your website, you have a really interesting map that shows the areas that are so vulnerable for kidnapping. That was so interesting. I think you have them in red.
In red, right.
And again, just not really having any idea of the of what goes on right. with this, that to me was really eye-opening. Like, would I ever want to travel to any of those
I know, it's
places?
Like, it's like three quarters of the world.
Yeah.
You know, and without giving anything away, KJ,
good luck with that.
Can you have our listeners get a little hint of what this book is about? We know it's about kidnapping.
Right.
So can you kind of go a little bit further or as far as you want to go?
Absolutely. Well, you know, there's probably about 25 elite kidnap negotiators in the world, and this is factual. A lot of my book, you'll learn, you know, a great deal about kidnap and ransom. I've done extensive research, and everything in it, like, has been vetted by these freedom brokers that I've met. But, you know, I wanted to do it. This is the first book in the series about Thea Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, kind of the one woman who does this kind of work. And, you know, she comes up against the toughest case of her career because she has a really special client, and that's her father.
Right.
So it's sort of like things have come full circle, you know, back when she was a kid and her brother was kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And now she was pretty much helpless and watched her brother be kidnapped.
Right.
And now she's a full-on freedom broker, and her father's kidnapped. And, you know, just basically the story is really, I think, one about family. And I feel like family is one of the most powerful things any writer can write about, because mm-hmm. the people we love the most and the ones that cause us the most grief, you know, and pain. And so it's really about a dysfunctional family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of the foundation of why Thea became a freedom broker.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that it'll be a great personal story to kick off the series.
I think you've managed to do just that. It's amazing that she is young as she is.
Oh, she's so talented. And you write the story with such vim and vigor. When we say we can't wait to turn the page, this is a riveting romp. It starts off and it doesn't hardly let you go. There's just action,
continual.
Action. We have lots of twists and turns and new characters introduced that we're not sure how big a part they'll play.
Right.
And then we discover the part they play. And you kind of go like, no. Or why didn't I see that coming?
Well, if I did my job right, hopefully you didn't, right? That's the
yeah.
I always love the comments that, you know, when people read my book and they put it down and they go, why did you kill off so-and-so?
Yeah.
I thought, well, good, it would surprise you. Yeah, it did, actually.
Well, and I really do like, I guess, Riff, is that how his name is abbreviated?
Yeah, that's correct.
Another really sort of superhuman action,
he's
you know?
Ex-Delta Force, so he's...
Yeah, he's another,
he's in there.
You know, incredible, really incredible character. They're a very special team, aren't they?
Well, yeah. Did you feel a little magnetism between those two?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a yin and yang going on there.
Absolutely. I was waiting for it to happen, but it just never did.
No, maybe book four. I don't know.
I'm reading this book, and I'm thinking, well, maybe KJ just wants to have him kill people. maybe that's the idea here.
I have a very romantic side. I promise. It's just that, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the story being a thriller in its essence, I wanted to bring in, you know, some romantic elements because I feel that romance adds to any story.
Sure.
But I also want to have it be an interesting arc during the series,
mm-hmm.
their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of grew up together, right?
You yes.
Riff is a childhood friend, and maybe she didn't really see him in that light
mm-hmm.
before.
Right. Well, you know, he's been in a different path than she has been,
mm-hmm.
so... But, oh, wow, what a great story.
Yeah, they're great characters.
And when you sat down to write this book, did you actually know that you were going to write it the way you wrote it, or did it start out something else and wind up this book?
Well, you know how we all have plotters and pantsers, right?
Oh, sure.
You know, and with respect to that, I'm like kind of pants on fire. So, you know, for me, like, I definitely kind of knew where I was headed. But I surprised myself during the writing of it, and that, to me, is such a joy. I have the deepest respect for people like Jeffrey Deaver, who do 110-page outlines, but it's just not who I am. It's
mm-hmm.
not the way I write.
Mm-hmm.
I really love exploring and learning as I go, and, you know, I always kind of plan, don't get me wrong, I'm a very methodical person, but at the same time, I really leave it open for things to happen that are surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you did. You did. I applaud you. In fact, I would do it, but you'd break your ears.
So.
Go ahead.
You know, I was going to say it's like a journey, really, of sorts, isn't it? Writing a novel. I mean, you know, you sit there for probably a year or more, you know, penning away, and it has to. I think that's the key, is to, you have to have that passion for the story, for the characters, and for the topic. And I chose kidnapping because I found it so fascinating and learned so much about that, you know, subject matter. And I'm hoping, you know, when people take it on vacation, they'll actually be safer as well, because there's lots of great travel tips in there.
Yeah, there is. Mm-hmm. I was amazed at the amount of travel tips you did put in there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so germane to the story that you don't even realize you're being taught travel tips.
Well, and then they have that get-together for people that are going to be traveling, and they teach them, you know, they give them kind of a lowdown on, you know, what to do and not do, and what to do if you're, I think, even kidnapped, you know, how to act. Which was very, you know, that was very interesting.
And it was.
You know.
It was.
Well, I laugh about that chapter, because I really wanted to showcase some of the fascinating, you know, things I've learned about kidnapping. So I amusingly said to myself, this is like the biggest info dump that's disguised as a great scene, you know?
Well, yeah, you know, you tell us that one of the options that a kidnapper may do is actually sell, you know, like find another group.
Right, to sell you to.
Sell, it's sort of like, you know, when mortgage companies bundle up their mortgages and sell them, you know, it's like we're gonna give you a special deal on this.
I get 12 hostages, you know, how many
I was,
do you want?
Like, I mean, I think my jaw dropped, like, what?
Yeah, and it does happen, and it's incredible, truly, you know, the world of hostages, it's expanding quite a bit. There's over 40,000 reported kidnappings a year. That's the ones that are actually just mentioned.
Right.
But there are many unreported, and it's growing, and the reason for that is twofold. Really, one is terrorism. They're using it as a fundraising mechanism. And second of all, military and police in certain third world countries are displaced. They have no way to put food on the table for their families.
Right.
And they're turning to kidnapping as a way of making a living, because there's an endless supply of the commodity they need, humans.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And then there are companies that provide insurance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
Yeah, insurance is actually, you know, usually insurance kind of, everyone's eyes glass over, right, and just kind of go, okay, you know, it's kind of a boring topic, but not in K&R. Mm-hmm. I find it, you know, you can get up to $50 million worth of kidnap and ransom insurance.
Wow.
And quite often, it's key that the person who's insured not know the amount they're insured for, because, of course, they're tortured during captivity.
Right.
They'll just cough up, hey, you know, I'm insured for $3 million, giving the kidnappers information.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. Well, the amazing part about it was towards the end of the book, you went back to one of the people that you heard about at the front of the book that was in her class, and he had been kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
and you made it quite comical.
Yeah.
I know. Did you feel sorry for him? Not so much,
I did not
right?
Feel sorry for him at all.
Not really.
Because he didn't listen to start with.
Not really.
I know. Like, really. Pay attention. And, you know, it's really interesting, because a lot of companies are doing, like, kind of mock kidnappings or training for their executives before they go overseas. Because to have that knowledge and to have gone through a scenario is a great way to sort of prevent it, first of all. And then if he does, the worst happens, to help you cope while you're in captivity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine. I'm too old to be out in some place now that's going to kidnap me, but holy crap.
Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to ask you, if you guys were kidnapped, what's the one thing you'd want to bring with you?
My husband.
Oh, that's a smart one. Poor guy. You're going to take him to get kidnapped?
No, but I don't go anywhere without him.
That's true. She doesn't.
He's here in the studio. He's laughing.
That's because he's a DD, the designated driver.
But that is a great question.
That is a good question.
Yeah. What do you recommend?
Well, there's many different answers depending on the way you look at it. You know, I'd bring Sia Paris myself.
Yeah,
well,
there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, yeah. Bring the seals with you, but...
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people say, you know, that they would bring a picture of their family because hope is key in kidnapping. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to keep that hope alive. Otherwise, you know, you will not survive because, you know, our hypothalamus, you know, makes us kind of kick into gear into fight or flight or freeze when we're under enormous duress. And in kidnapping, you just sort of have to endure. You've got to endure the boredom, the terrible food, the horrific conditions, the, you know, not knowing if you're going to live or die every day. There's so much uncertainty and so much hardship that I think having a picture of your family would be a really good beacon of hope.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, the absolute terror of just living through it would do it for most people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, incidentally, before I forget, Netflix has an absolutely wonderful movie. It's about the children soldiers in Africa.
Oh.
It's called Children of No Country.
Oh.
And it is really, really, really good and very well done. So if you get a chance and you have Netflix, you got to go watch that because it's really good movie.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated. Like, you know, living in Africa, that once you've been there, it's sort of in your blood, and it feels like when you go back, you're coming home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so passionate about that, and there's so many like adorable children there that just need help. You know, it's really sad how they kind of indoctrinate them, you know, through drugs and you know, kind of desensitization to kill. And I just think it's really, really sad because you know they lose their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're 9 years old and they're 30.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or then some, I think.
Or then some. Well, let's kind of switch gears a little bit here. Let's talk a little bit about your process. And, you know, how does your writing day go?
Well, I'm a morning person. So for me, I feel the subconscious is still kind of bubbling away when you first wake up.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to write my fiction. I have, like, as you know, like you said earlier, I have another job.
Right.
And a lot of other commitments. So I really enjoy getting my writing in first thing. And just kind of plow through. I don't usually have necessarily a word count. I tend to write in scenes.
Uh-huh.
So I tend to write a scene a day, you know, like basically start to finish, unless it's a super long one. But as you know from reading my books, my scenes are pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I like to keep the pacing going. And so I really enjoy it like that. And then what I'll do is I'll edit later in the day when I feel like I've got kind of my more logical side on and sort of critique what I've done. You know, I really, really enjoy editing, and I know that sounds probably people will be like, say what? But I love tinkering with the words, and I really enjoy trying to come up with different ways of phrasing things or some kind of unusual combination or description.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In this book, what are some of the things you edited out?
Ah, wow. Good question.
That's a great question.
All the sex scenes, according to apparently, none in the book.
She left a couple. She left a couple in there. Woo! Woo! Hot and steamy. Oh my goodness!
I love it. Well, I would say that anything that wasn't pushing the story forward, anything extraneous, because I really love fast-paced stories, and I tried to make mine one. So I feel like if something isn't doing at least double, if not triple duty. Like, you know, developing character or forwarding the plot or kind of, you know, doing something that's going to move the story forward, I tried to yank it out. I did go in and take out some of the diabetes mention because I felt it might have been a touch heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I wanted to show that, you know, Thea's real life with diabetes, but not overkill and mention it all the time because it's a part of her life, but it's not necessarily who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
It's,
so that
it
was,
is.
That
it's
was
a part of her life.
Balance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, did you, when you were writing, did you find that your characters wrote a lot of their own dialogue?
Definitely.
Yeah. We find that a lot with a lot of writers we talk to have the same answer. Yes, they do.
And yeah. I kind of flip back and forth in a really interesting way. Like, I go from watching, it's sort of, sometimes I'm like watching a screen in front of me, like my book's a movie and I'm actually watching it happen. And then other times I jump to right behind the eyes of the character and exactly what you just said, the dialogue's natural, it comes out of their mouth, it's like there, I'm them, you know, I'm kind of, so it's really a nice, interesting flip. I'm a very visual person, so I think the movie kind of screen helps me.
When or how do you think about the reader when you're writing?
Well, I have the greatest respect for readers, and I try and challenge myself to avoid, you know, boring them. I'm trying to avoid confusing them. I try to avoid, you know, making things too complicated or, you know, too simple, both, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. readers are super smart, mm-hmm. but also you don't want to get convoluted as well. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a really tricky balance, but I'm constantly thinking of the reader. My dream reader is there, and I want to make them really happy.
Well, yeah, I know you made these two really happy.
And
a lot of the other reviewers that.
Oh, I read a lot of the reviews on your book.
Yeah. And Clive Cussler, and oh my gosh.
One that really struck me was, oh my God, she bungee jumped off a bridge.
Oh, I know. Oh, amazing. Yeah. Do you work with a literary agent, or tell us a little bit about?
Do.
You do. Okay, and how did you find?
Yeah, it's a great story. Actually, I'm incredibly lucky. I studied with, you know, Karen Slaughter, of course. She's a phenomenal author. If you haven't read her before, you need to read her right away because she is sensational. So Karen was teaching a retreat in Hawaii about places. You can tell I like to go to warm spots. And it draws me in. And so I was studying with Karen, and she was super kind. And during, we have a group of people in the retreat, but then we also get on one-on-one. So during my one-on-one with Karen, she was kind enough to say, I think my agent might really enjoy your strong female protagonists and your writing. Do you mind if I connect you guys? And I'm like, hello, of course.
Mm-hmm. No, don't.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I'm begging you.
It turned out that Victoria Sanders, who's just an incredible agent, did enjoy the work enough to sign me. And so before I knew it, I had an agent, and it was a beautiful way to get one because I felt like Karen really understood what Victoria liked, mm-hmm. and it was a good fit. And it's lovely to have an agent who truly likes the type of work you're writing, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel that's really important.
Yeah.
We all have different taste, right? You know
well,
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You just can't, you know, there's certain things we love and certain things we don't care for.
Right.
So to find an agent with the same passion for that kind of literature is great.
Right. Yeah. That actually, the very same conversation came up. We had a two-hour show a couple of weeks back, and the subject of the show was agents and publishers and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And that comment came out of more than one person.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Mm-hmm. So, and
yeah,
then
I think it's key to see this, to have the same vision as your agent,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was actually, I think it's more of key for the agent to have your vision.
Good point. Love it.
Mm-hmm. And then.
Yeah, like at Thriller Fest, we have Pitch Fest, right? Which is
right.
where
yes.
we have over 60 agents there, and all the aspiring authors come. So if there's aspiring authors listening, come to Pitch Fest.
That's so cool.
Pitch your novel, and you'll have a great chance of getting an agent.
Right.
Because we have over 60 of them there.
That I did spend a little time on the Thriller Fest website. Oh my gosh, what a fun, what a wonderful group! And there's a contest, the best first sentence contest, and then on the site are the winners for this year. They're so great, these first sentences. How does, do you just, to enter that contest, you have to have purchased your reservation and all to come to the conference? Is that how that works?
No, you can do one of a couple of things. So you can either be signed up for Thriller Fest, any part of Thriller Fest, could be Craft Fest, could be an Agent Fest, whatever. Or you can be an ITW, an International Thriller Writer member. So you can be an associate member if you're pre-published, and if you're published, you can be an active member. So if you're any of those, you can send in the best first sentence contest. And the prize is pretty phenomenal. It's 10-page critique with one of the top authors we have.
Wow. Wow.
Outstanding.
Doesn't get any better.
Yeah. No.
Some of these sentences were just fabulous. It's like, okay, I want to read the rest of the paragraph, you know?
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
It gets you hooked, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that it's key, you know, to have that first sentence, first paragraph, because these days it's so incredibly competitive out there for aspiring authors.
Oh, it truly is.
Agents are inundated, right, with manuscripts, so you've got to make especially your first page shine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You going to ask the question?
I am going to ask the question.
Okay.
We have the question. This is one we ask every writer we have on the show. And because the name of the program is, of course, The Writer's Block, have you ever had writer's block?
Or believe it. Believe
or
it
believe
or don't
in it.
Believe in it.
Well, I'm just laughing because what's coming to my mind, Lee Childs was asked this at Thriller Fest this year. And he had the best answer. He said, you know, when a truck driver, you know, gets in this truck in the long haul, right?
Mm-hmm.
And does he have truck driver's block?
Well, some do.
Sometimes.
There he drives his truck because it's his job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and surgeons, you know, when they're ready to go in surgeon, do they have surgeon block? You know. But anyway, I've never had it because what I've come up against hard situations where I've written myself into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't consider that writer's block because I just have to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So what I tend to do is go and do some sort of walking or swimming or some rhythmic activity, which actually helps your brain process a problem. Or I'll sleep on it, and before I go to bed at night, I'll say to myself, okay, my mind needs to figure out this problem overnight. This is an issue. And our subconscious is incredibly powerful. And quite often I'll wake up and think, you know, I think I've got this. You know, or go for the walk, like I said, and sort of figure it out. And obviously some problems or blocks are a little tougher than others.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I really feel that if you've got either you work hard to figure out the problem or you relax enough to let your brain and the subconscious figure out the problem,
mm-hmm.
you should be good to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We had one of the writers that we asked that question to. He says, I don't believe in writer's block. He said, but there is a writer's pause. Remember that? I remember who that was.
I love that. That's a brilliant answer. And let me tell you something. The one thing I can say about writing is we all do it differently.
Absolutely.
And we all come across different things.
Absolutely.
And we all have weaknesses and strengths.
Right.
And I think we just have to understand our weaknesses and strengths and work within them and, like, keep honing our writing.
Right.
I feel like writing is a lifelong journey, and I'm hoping to keep, like, really work hard to improve.
Well, you know, the deal in the creative writing class that I took when I was in college, and then being a novelist, the one truth in everything is that the more you write, the better you get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a way, it's just a fact of life. So, you know, and you know, if you want to sit down and edit what you wrote in the morning, even better yet, because now you get a chance to go back and take a look at some of the ridiculous stuff you did write, and you get to change it.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay, good.
To this great book called Grit, and it talks about how, you know, people in every field master their field. And it's been proven that you need at least 10,000 hours of any activity
right.
to come to any sort of mastery.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to start wrapping this up because, of course, as we spoke to you earlier, we have our roving reporter going to be calling in. So if you want to take a couple minutes and give our listeners an idea where they can find you, your website and Facebook
and all.
Email address and all that good stuff.
Well, I love hearing from people. And I'm at kjhow.com. with respect to my website, and I'm at KJ Howe, you know, author on Twitter and Facebook. And also, you can find my email on the Thriller Fest website, and I'm always happy to help other authors or aspiring
Excellent.
Authors. You know, I'm here to help.
Excellent. That's very, very, very big of you, and not a lot of writers do that.
Well, and we're looking forward to book two.
We are.
Thank you.
We are. And that, of course, the name
very
of that book
help.
Is Skyjack,
Skyjack,
and that's due out when?
Yeah.
It'll be out in April 2018.
Okay.
Buckle those seatbelts.
Yeah.
So the name of this book is Freedom Broker.
That's correct.
KJ Howe. My gosh, what a great writer. And I have to tell you, I have to go to the post office to mail your package, so I couldn't
Thank
do it
you.
With
and,
I couldn't do it with my stamps.com.
And thanks a lot for having me on and taking the time to read too. It means a lot.
Oh, no worries. Here, let's see if we can get Henry in on this real quick. Henry, are you there? Henry?
Nothing.
No, Henry.
Well, hello, Bobby, Lane, and Jim.
Hey, say hello to KJ Howe, Henry.
Hey, KJ, how are you?
A real pleasure. Nice to see you. How's it going? When we thought you were missing in action for a brief second.
Oh, no. I always like to make an entrance.
He does. So he does.
I like to do it with dead air. That's my thing. But I've been very much enjoying your talk. Looking forward to reading your books.
You would love this book, Henry.
You'll love it. You'll absolutely love it. Trust me.
Outstanding.
Okay. KJ, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great time having you. And I will get that mug and that book out to you as quickly as I can.
Thank you, guys. And I, Bobby, I hope you get some nice rain for you to cheer you up.
Oh, thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
She's the only person I know that gets cheered up by rain.
Oh, I know. The sound of it, the smell of it. Oh, my gosh.
Thank you again, KJ. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your evening.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
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 Okay.
You know, my wife is such a California girl that she hopes for rainy Christmases.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't even, plan on snow.
Yeah.
Oh.
But it's a regional thing.
Yes, it is.
But by the way, I'm standing here, sitting here holding my beautiful writer's block mug.
Oh, of course you are.
Very good.
Of course I am.
You're the man.
I'm putting it down, though. So I don't spill coffee on myself.
I was going to say, what do you have in it?
Yeah.
What do you have in it?
Coffee. Come on.
Well, I'm calling it coffee.
Okay.
Oh, you're Dean Martin.
But it's coffee usually doesn't smell quite like that. But what can you
that's
do?
Okay.
It's a beverage.
We call it Crown Royal. You can call it coffee.
Sadly, now it's Royal Crown. The cheap cola.
Got it. So what is
actually,
happening?
No, there
in
was a great
world?
Event this past weekend that I'm going to be writing about this Sunday in the Roundup and soon in True West.
Okay.
At the Marriott in Burbank.
Okay.
There was the 50th anniversary celebration for the series The High Chaparral.
Mm. Oh,
did you ever
okay.
watch it?
Absolutely. When I was a kid, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was. It's interesting to me that David Dortort, who created Bonanza,
right.
decided to do another family show about a dysfunctional family. And really gave it a lot more edge. I think it really ages well. And, God, the fans of this series are like no other.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are occasional Bonanza events and Gunsmoke events from time to time. But these folks have been getting together every year at Old Tucson where the show was shot.
Right.
Just for years.
Right.
And this is expected to be the last time. Henry Darrow, who played Manolito, was there. Don mm-hmm. Collier, who played Sam. Rudy Ramos, who played the Cannon's adopted son, Wind. Cameron Mitchell's son and daughter were there. Great fun. Linda Crystal's son was there. She wanted to attend, but she's having vision problems, so she couldn't make it.
Mm.
And ramrodding the whole event were Kent McRae and Susan McRae. She did casting on the show, and her father, Harry Sukman, composed their scores.
Mm-hmm.
And Kent was the production manager on Chaparral and Bonanza before.
Mm.
And he was Michael Landon's production partner on all his later shows. And he's written a fascinating book that I'll be reviewing soon about his career in television.
Mm-hmm.
Funny thing, next door at the hotel is a horror movie convention.
Oh,
Monsterpalooza.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, what is that? Interesting mix of people. And yet there was Wilfred Brimley.
Oh, wow.
He was there for the monster thing. And Bo Hopkins. I ran into Bo in the parking lot, and he told me, I dropped into the High Chap thing to say hi to everyone, but everyone had gone to the Autry.
Wow.
He's done things, films of all genres.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a fellow named Mark Brower. He's a Phoenix-based writer and director Patrick Ball collaborated on a really fine independent Western a couple of years ago, C-Bar. And Mark stars in it, and he also has written a couple of Western novels. And now Mark and Patrick are continuing the story, and C-Bar is now a web series.
Oh.
And I'll be telling you how you can catch the first chapter, and it's really, really pretty clever stuff. Really nicely done. Really going to wait to see where the story goes. So they're in Phoenix, and not far away in Tucson, writer-director Travis Mills has made a brand new Western feature. Very tough, elegant thing based on a real murder set in Mississippi right after the Civil War. It's opening theatrically October 7th, so I may be the very first writer to review it,
mm-hmm.
and I hope I like it. because I only got to see the first half hour before I had to stop to call you guys.
Oh. But,
so I can say it's a terrific first half hour, and I'm really hoping I like the rest, because I don't want to be the first guy to review it and not like it.
There you go. No kidding. Well, the first half hour was great. The second three quarters sucked.
we've seen movies like that.
Yes,
we have.
And we've read books like that.
And yeah. Read novels like that. Oh, gosh, who was the guy who wrote lots of very noirish, dark stuff? The Getaway is based on.
I know who you're talking about. I don't recall his name.
I'm blackout. I've read like 30 of his books, but he was somebody that he would get his advance after he turned in the first 8 chapters. Mm-hmm. So it was always a great 8 chapters, and then the rest of it was sometimes good and sometimes just read like he wrote it the rest of, you know, that afternoon, the whole thing. But anyhow, I'm very hopeful. There's something interesting happening tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The Valley Relics Museum in Chatsworth.
Mm-hmm.
They're celebrating the dedication of Glenn Strange Rock at the Iverson Movie Ranch.
Wow.
Now, do you remember Glenn as Sam the bartender?
Yeah.
At the Long Branch. In
right.
But he appeared in over 300 films and TV shows, mostly Westerns, played Frankenstein's monster in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. But the most crucial thing in this event is in the first episode of the Lone Ranger TV show, he played Butch Cavendish, who ambushes those Texas Rangers behind the rock.
Yes, and now that you mentioned
it.
That
is the rock they're dedicating.
Oh, my God.
Oh, the Lone Ranger rock? Really?
Wow.
Yeah. They've still got that rock, and they've got a great picture of him hiding behind it with a rifle, trying to kill Clayton Moore and everybody.
Oh yeah. God. Wow.
And they're doing that tomorrow.
They're doing that tomorrow, and it's $10 admission. It's a fundraiser for the museum.
Okay.
And they'll show that episode. There's going to be a display of costumes, all sorts of guests and such. So it really sounds like a fun event.
Actually,
you can see that rock still from the 118 in Chatsworth up in the hill.
Oh, my gosh.
Very cool.
Yeah. It
is great, the stuff you can see from, you know, the stuff that they haven't moved or built around too much.
Right. Well, Lone Ranger's mine is up in Rocky Peak.
Right.
And they used to, and the Manson people used to go up there and hide out in there.
Oh,
what are you going to do? Who are you going to call? Anyway, what else we got going?
Well, let's see. Now, a week from Friday, next Friday, September 29th, is the 110th anniversary of Gene Autry's birth.
Yes,
oh,
it is.
Oh, wow.
And if you go to the Autry, and you were one of the first 110 visitors, you'll receive a free DVD of Gene in Sioux City, Sioux.
Oh, how fun.
Oh, and even if you're number 111 or after, you get a slice of birthday cake.
I was just going to say, what do? They just pull this number out of a hat. Okay, the first 97 people that come in the door.
110 birthday.
Yeah.
110 DVDs.
Oh, that's
okay,
fun.
Okay, got it. All right.
And their big gala fundraiser was right around the corner, too. Their big annual fundraiser, the gala, is right around the corner also.
Well,
it's always
the Masters.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? The next day at the Autry is Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Author Boyd Majors, who's a terrific Western film and TV authority.
Yes, he is.
Writes Western Clippings, if you've ever read that.
Mm-hmm.
I steal so much from it. I mean, I research it.
As well, you should.
And he will be presenting his new book, A Gathering of Guns, A Half Century of TV Westerns from 1949 to 2001.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's going to be doing a Q&A there at 9:30 with Maxine Hansen. I bet you know
great,
her.
Great. He's a fabulous writer. Yeah, every book that he's put out is so thoroughly researched and becomes really very important in documenting Western film and TV history.
Absolutely. And no surprise, he'll be signing the book afterwards at the Autry Museum store.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool.
And you know what? You can read about all that and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
All right. Good job, Henry. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Henry.
Lovely talking to you guys.
We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Look forward to
it. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Henry Park, our roving reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, next week here on the Writer's Block, we have a writer named Susie Vidori. and she's written a book about a magic fountain at a highbrow, high-class high school in the East Coast. I don't remember the name of it now. I'm right in the middle of the book. It's an interesting read, to say the least. Russ, of course, will be here with me next week, and mm-hmm. you, of course, will be doing your concert. And who is there?
Well, we actually are dark in September, but there is a terrific band coming in from Northern California for September 30th, the Carolyn Sills Combo, fabulous Western swing band, and they are opening for a very well-known country performer named James Hand. And so we will be there on the 30th, which is the Saturday
night.
It's
a Saturday night, right.
It's a Saturday night, and this has actually been booked through the city's arts and events staff.
Oh, cool.
We are dark in September, but Carolyn's coming right in at about the same time, so that's where we'll be there on Saturday.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Well, it's been another wonderful show, and golly, just tune in with us next week. Mr. Avison will be here. He's always a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And I haven't talked with Susie Vidori, but I will be on the phone with her this week, and we'll get that handled. And, of course, as always, we are happy that you listen to us, and thank you for taking your time out of your busy evenings to listen to us poor little peons here in the studio, trying to give you some information on writing. Okay, that's it for us tonight. This is, of course, LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block, and once again, we are out of here.